Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Joining us on the line now is Richard Simon, a former reporter and webmaster at Baltimore's The Daily Record, who took a year's break, had a bit of a detox from using his phone, and has stuck to it. He leaves his smartphone off by default. His new book is called Unplug: How to Break Up with Your Phone and Reclaim Your Life. He says our phones take us away from our lives, our relationships, and the real world. Welcome to the show, Richard.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you with us. And what a fascinating topical subject. We talk about this subject all the time, how people have become addicted to their phones, not just children, but adults as well. So when did you decide to do this detox, and how did it go?
Yeah, so in 2019, as a husband and at the time a father of two young kids, my smartphone was putting really a strain on so many facets of my life, from the ability to focus with my work, to relationships with my wife, with my kids, with friends, and then really reconnecting with myself, just in terms of being able to embrace solitude, just being able to be comfortable with being quiet. And I had tried so many hacks. Digital Sabbath, deleting social media from my phone, putting a rubber band around it, turning it to grayscale, so many different shortcuts, but I realized it's too much of a behavioral addiction. The first thing I needed to do to reset my relationship was turn it off.
Gosh. So, I mean, was there, you talk about in the book, there being a kind of a withdrawal period, which may sound funny to some, but as you say, it is a very real addiction for many. So what happened when you turned off your phone?
Yeah, I interviewed dozens of people, and pretty much everyone had the same reaction that I did, varying in intensity, but withdrawal is very, very common. And for me, that's what I experienced. For me, it was more anxiety. I just wasn't comfortable just like from even mundane shopping errands, just like going to the grocery store and you're waiting in line at the grocery store with nothing to do. I was like freaking out a bit inside, because even though it was like 2-3 minutes, like I had just become so accustomed to just the constant companion model of the phone. I wasn't comfortable enough in my own skin to even just like be able to accept that. So the first 2 weeks, 3 weeks for me, there was definitely some uneasiness in terms of the experience. But once you get past the withdrawal, my gosh, it all becomes worth it.
So how did it change your life in a positive way then with regards to your relationships?
Yeah, my wife was definitely one of the biggest areas of improvement in terms of our relationship. So often, as listeners probably have experienced, you know, you're texting a spouse or a partner throughout the day, and by the time you get home in the evening, there's nothing to catch up on, because you've literally just been texting each other all day. So with texting removed, with my smartphone off, all of a sudden I get home in the evening and my wife and I would have tons to talk about, and we'd be excited because there was this element almost of surprise. We haven't seen or texted each other throughout the day, so there's sort of some excitement. Also, after putting the kids to sleep, before I had my smartphone off, my wife and I, you know, we'd just be on our phones like for an hour or two just scrolling. So we were there together, but I mean, we really weren't. We were half there, half not. And with my smartphone off, my wife and I, we really made a point to spend high quality time together.
Oh, lovely. And with regards to work, because you said with your phone, you were sometimes finding it difficult to focus on work. So presumably work became clearer and better and you're able to concentrate more.
Exactly. Yeah, I really was able to focus so deeply. And something that I think will resonate too with listeners is meetings. You know, so often, especially when you're doing in-person meetings, like if you have your phone right there on the table, or even if you have a laptop in the room, you're often distracted. I found my ability to retain information and to connect more deeply in meetings to be so profound when I had my smartphone off. And now it's a given. After I got past that year-long period where I had my phone off, I never bring my phone or a laptop into meetings. It's always a pen and paper, which is something that I wasn't used to, but it's something I think is a really keen insight.
Yeah. And I mean, work is one of the big reasons or justifications even a lot of people have for being on their phones all the time. Oh, I need to be able to check my emails. I need to be able to be contacted at any time by my boss or my colleagues from work. And that's often, as I say, like an excuse or a reason people give for needing to be near their phones all the time. So how do you get past that? How do you convince yourself and your colleagues or your boss that you maybe aren't going to reply to them immediately?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, for sure, I talk about the importance of preparation before you go ahead and turn off your smartphone for a period of time. You want to make sure that you have a support group, and that includes your professional network. So if you have a supervisor, you should tell them, hey, this is for my mental health. This is to improve my work output, to be more productive. I want to better myself in terms of my personal relationships, and I want to be a better version of me. And if you make that case in terms of the mental health and being a better worker, I think they'll buy it. You can certainly mention my book also in the profiles in it. That seems to work, I think, also. But there's some, for sure, there are, even though the majority of workers, I think, can get by without a smartphone, there certainly are career paths where a smartphone is required. For example, I interviewed an on-call anesthesiologist at one of the top research hospitals in the States, Johns Hopkins Hospital. And for him, a work smartphone is absolutely required. So what does he do to be in control of his smartphone rather than it being in control of him? So what he does is he has a work-issued smartphone that he uses at the hospital. But what happens when he leaves the hospital? He leaves his work smartphone plugged in his office. And when he leaves, he has a one-way, not a two-way, but a one-way pager. And he doesn't have a personal smartphone. His argument to me was, why would I want to bring that craziness, that day-to-day craziness when I'm at the hospital where he's literally saving lives and see some of the craziest cases? Why would I want to bring that craziness home with me? So it shows that even, this is very much an extreme in terms of using a smartphone for work, but even if a smartphone is required for work, there is a way to make it so that it doesn't impede in terms of your personal digital life.
Yeah. And one of your wife's biggest concerns when you were wanting to do this initially was the importance of being able to contact you in an emergency, you know, whether it's to do with her or the children. And again, a lot of people will say, no. What if there's a family emergency? I need my phone for that purpose. How do you get through that?
Yeah, absolutely. I go through four breakup styles in the book. And the one that I embraced is a philosophy that I've coined, the off by default philosophy. So when you're going through a detox, and I recommend at least 60 days of turning your phone off. But for this breakup style, the off by default, you basically still hold on to your smartphone. So let's say you take the kids to the zoo or to the park and your wife's not with you. Okay, so bring your smartphone with you, but don't turn it on. And the only circumstance for you to turn on your phone is if there's an emergency. Now, for everyone I interviewed that went through the off by default philosophy, there weren't any emergencies. We think there are emergencies, but there really aren't emergencies. But so I didn't turn my phone on during my detox period because there weren't any emergencies. But my wife was thankful because I had it on me. And if there was something that came up, I could use it.
Yeah. But also it's from the other side of things, isn't it? You know, what if your wife had an emergency, if she was with the kids and she wanted to contact you and your phone was off, how would that have worked?
Yeah. So in general, there's pretty much always a way for me to be contacted. So when I'm working, I still have a work phone. I still have email. At home, we have a landline. We also have a front door. So truly, if there is an emergency, I'm much more contactable than any individual was 20 plus years ago in terms of the ways to contact me. I'm still very reachable. You know, our kids are in school. If there is an emergency, you know, I do once again have a work phone. I do have a personal phone if I'm at home. So there are ways to certainly get in touch with me. But in terms of the constant companion model of the phone and the distraction it causes, it means it's not following me all around the place.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have to ask you, when you first got rid of your phone, aside from the habit of standing in a supermarket queue and just getting your phone out for random scrolling or whatever, what was it that you missed the most? Was it scrolling through social media? Was it games? What were the things that you really missed the most at the beginning or even now?
Yeah, there was nothing that I missed except one feature on the phone. And this is really the only thing that I missed, and that was GPS. I went through my year-long detox, and I was printing out directions, and I was able to navigate much better, even around my own community. I live in the Baltimore, Washington, D.C. area, so I was able to navigate a lot better because I wasn't dependent on print directions, because I wasn't dependent on a GPS. But after my year-long detox was up, I knew that I wanted to bring GPS back in, but how could I bring it in effectively? So to this day, 4 years since my detox, I still embrace the off-by-default philosophy, but I've tweaked the definition to, after your detox, still embrace the off-by-default philosophy. You still have your phone off in its default mode, but you turn it on when you want to do something that will enhance your life. Now, if I were to tell you, Hannah, right now, listen, do the off-by-default philosophy, only turn your phone on to enhance your life, it would be very difficult to set up the proper boundaries and guardrails. But after you've gone through the detox process and you know how good it feels to have your phone off, you're able to bring it back into your life much more deliberately. So most days of the week, my phone stays off. But if there is an instance, for example, I'm taking the kids on a trip, a day trip, and it's an hour and a half, 2 hours away, it's really helpful to have that GPS. But let's say we arrive at the amusement park, we're there, I turn off my phone when I get there, because if I had my phone on, even after everything I've been through over the last 6 years, everything, it still would be a distraction if I had it on in my pocket. So that, yeah, that's my setup right now.
It's fascinating what you say about GPS. We watch, which you're probably very familiar of, The Amazing Race, the American show where they put people in twos and they have to travel across the world, and they don't have phones. And often they have to stop people in the street and get directions from other people. But sometimes when they're having to drive, they have physical maps. And a lot of them, the younger contestants particularly, have no clue how to read a map, and they're like turning them round going, well, I don't understand, where are we? I just don't get it. And it's really interesting. There's obviously, you know, at least one, maybe even two generations that have grown up never having used a physical map and relied on GPS and a voice in the car telling them to turn left, as opposed to them having to read a map themselves.
Oh, that's so true. And yeah, I have a whole section in the book about getting comfortable without GPS. And I profile an immigration attorney who was in Italy for some time and then eventually settled in Spain. And she didn't have a smartphone intentionally. She had a flip phone, a basic phone. And she said how empowering it was to be engaging with these paper maps. She said she learned her community so much better by engaging with paper maps, by asking people for directions. She said it was such an empowering experience. She said if you just use GPS, years later, she still might know her community as well. Whereas now, because she has to really be intentional with how she engages with directions, she said it's a completely different experience.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, it takes more work and more planning and things. You know, I remember as a child, before going off on holiday, driving around parts of Europe with my parents, my dad would spend ages studying the map before we left, planning out the route and things like that. And now often, even though my dad uses GPS himself, sometimes when he says to me, oh, how are you going to get there, when we're going on a road trip a few hours away or so, and I literally say, well, I don't know, GPS will tell me, because you don't need to plan a route beforehand. We literally get so lazy relying on GPS, because there's absolutely no need to look in advance. We just put in our location and trust the process and hope that it works.
So true.
Yeah. And I read a statistic yesterday that said in 2012, calling someone on our mobile phones was the fifth most used thing that we used our phone for. Even in 2012, actually calling someone on our phone was the fifth most used thing that we did it for, which I thought was really interesting. So I expect now it's even less. It might be the 10th or the 12th thing that we use our phones for, which is crazy, isn't it, really?
That's correct. I mean, what makes it so addictive is really the amalgamation of all these tools, from email to texting to internet to mobile gaming, to social media applications, to fitness, to finance. I mean, the list just goes on with each new phone iteration, camera,
Absolutely.
Photos. And even if you, that's what I found, like everyone says just delete social media. That's very noble. That's a noble hack. I think it's great for people to get off social media, but it won't change how much you're checking your phone because there are all the other addictive features of the phone there. I mean, the Crackberry or the Blackberry pre-iPhone release in 2007, they called it a Crackberry because people just wanted to check email all day. So even if you just have an email, you know, device in your pocket, forget about everything else from internet to everything else. You'll still want to check it all the time. There's something from a dopamine perspective that is so unbelievably incentivizing that it's just too difficult to resist.
Yeah, it is unbelievable, isn't it? And it makes it feel, when you list all those things, and I was thinking of other things as well, shopping apps as well. We do a lot of shopping on our phones that we could do on our computers, but obviously it's so much easier to do it on our phone. Listening to music as well, listening to podcasts, you know, there's so much that we can do via our phones. So many of these other gadgets we've stopped using, and people have got rid of their MP3 players or their CD players even further back, or even the devices to read books. Some people read books on their phones or listen to books through audio. You know, people have got rid of loads of other gadgets and just have their phones that can fulfill all of those different things.
Yeah, and I never make the argument in the book to not own a smartphone. But my argument is that, you know, the average adult, this is at least in the States, spends more than 5 hours a day on their smartphone. Add that up across the entire year, that's more than 75 days a year. And that's time we just can't get back. And my goal is, when I talk about this detox and these breakup styles, is that we want to recalibrate the reward pathways in the brain, where if you do decide after a detox to reintegrate the smartphone back into your life, instead of spending, let's say, 5.5-6 hours a day on your smartphone at least, we want to get to a point where you are more intentional with your smartphone, where you can look down at your screen time at the end of the day and say, oh, wow, I only spent 55 minutes and 40 minutes of that was listening to a podcast. 10 minutes of that was for a call. And 4 minutes of that was for email. Like, that's what we want to get to, is we want you to be in control of your phone rather than it being in control of you. And that's really the power of turning it off as a first step.
Yeah, definitely. And how have other people in your life been affected by your journey? Have they come on board with you, your wife and your kids and other family members and friends? What do they think about what you're doing?
Yeah, at first they thought I was crazy. And most people I interviewed, that's their exact reaction. Like, are you crazy? But then as I started to talk about it more, and, you know, I started writing this book, and then the book was getting closer to coming out, and I was starting to speak publicly and talk about these ideas, starting to get more and more emails and messages from people just telling me, I want to try this. The book was released 2 weeks ago, and already the emails are coming in. I heard from a pastor who's in Mississippi, rural Mississippi, said he just switched over to a basic phone, embracing one of the breakup styles in my book. The week before, I heard from someone from the state of Georgia who read the book and decided, you know what, I am a mom of a couple kids. I want to try this. I heard from someone in the UK a couple of days ago who said, you know, read the book and I really want to try the off by default philosophy. So the key thing is that, unlike a gambling addiction or an alcohol addiction, where there's a, you know, certainly like a stigma behind, like, ultimately detoxing, for a smartphone, like, you should tell people about, you know, quitting. Like, I profile a college student from Notre Dame who wrote a letter to the editor about how he switched from a smartphone to a basic phone, and ended up becoming the most popular article on the student newspaper website. And all of a sudden, there are dozens of people walking around with flip phones around Notre Dame thanks to this guy and this article. So it absolutely is possible. And when you pull out a flip phone when you're in public, or a basic phone, or if you have your smartphone off, people might be surprised, but they might be jealous. And I think that's something that's natural.
Yeah. I suppose one of the big things is realizing how much more time you have. You know, a lot of people probably wouldn't admit how much time they're spending on their phone and think, oh, no, I don't have a problem. I just need it for work. And, you know, I'm just checking social media and are probably in denial by how much time they're on it, and certainly won't see themselves as being addicted. But then not using their mobile phone for, if they do it for a year, do the whole detox, they'll probably realize how much extra time they have to spend with their family, or to go for walks, or to exercise, or whatever it might be.
Yeah, and that's where preparation is so key before going through any of the breakup styles in my book. You need to make sure you're preparing. One of the key pieces to preparation, we already talked about, making sure you have a support group, but also it's really important to find good replacement activities. Because like you said, the average person after turning off their smartphone is going to get 5-6 hours at least back every single day. And the key question is, how are you going to fill that time? You don't want to just go on a computer every night for 3 to 4 hours as your replacement behavior. Yeah. No, like you want to create that menu of options, whether it's joining a book club, whether it's joining a tennis league, whether it's once every week going out to dinner with your spouse or a friend. You're going to have so much time, hours and hours. So finding those replacement activities, and that's what makes the process so incredibly rewarding, is that all of a sudden you have time that you didn't have before, and you're going to be able to fill it with much more meaningful things than doom scrolling.
Yeah. One of the things I just suddenly thought of is QR codes during the pandemic. I'm assuming it was the same in the States, that they didn't give you proper printout menus in restaurants, and you had to read a menu through a QR code. And I remember at the time, my husband and I saying, what about people who don't have smartphones? How are they supposed to look at a menu? And lots, obviously, since the pandemic, most restaurants have physical menus now. But even last night, I went to a restaurant that gave me a card with a QR code on it. So there are still places that have that. What do you do in that situation?
Yeah, that's a great question. I interview and profile a couple who lives in Italy who during the pandemic, they talked about how when they would go to restaurants, most things were outdoors. Menu would come across with a QR code, and you would scan it and pick your menu. And they would speak up. They would say, we don't have smartphones. Then what would happen? They would get a physical menu. It's important to speak up for your values. Like there's a person I profile in the book who is a big Denver Nuggets fan, an NBA basketball team, and doesn't have a smartphone, doesn't have a way to scan his tickets in. So what does he do? He prints out his ticket confirmation, takes it to guest relations, and what happens? He gets a physical ticket to the game. So now he holds on to like the good old days, his physical tickets. He has physical tickets that he collects. So it's really, really important to speak up for your values. Like I work at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., and 99% of people at the university use their smartphone to scan into buildings. I still have a smartphone, but I don't want to turn it on to do that. So I spoke up. So what happened? I got a physical card that I now use to scan into buildings. How about two-factor authentication? So many workers now have two-factor authentication to get into work accounts or whatever it might be. Well, now I have a device that I can use to use two-factor authentication. So although it's certainly integrated into the modern-day economy so much, the smartphone, it's really, really important to speak up for your values.
Yeah, definitely. And one other thing I wanted to ask you, because you mentioned that you've interviewed various people in the book to see how they've got on doing this detox. There's one person who's a social media marketer without a phone. How does that work?
Yes. So I interview and profile a social media marketer from Northern Ireland. She's originally from Leeds, but now resides in Northern Ireland with her husband. And they did the breakup style in my book of quitting together. They did it as a couple when she was in Leeds for college and when he was in Northern Ireland. Now they're married, settled in Northern Ireland. And as a social media strategist, what she does is she absolutely needs a smartphone for work. Similar to the one called anesthesiologist, there's no way of getting around it. She needs the smartphone. But what does she do? She separates, just like the anesthesiologist, her professional and personal digital footprints, where when she's done with work and she's done doing her marketing, she leaves the work smartphone in her office and turns it off. And then when she gets back home, she turns on her personal technology. It used to be a basic phone, a flip phone. Now it's a smartphone that's very dumbed down. And that way, she's not hooked into all of the commotion of what social media can bring. It stays at work. I think that's a very, very powerful idea, because the smartphone is something that many workers do need, but don't bring it into your personal life.
Yeah, no, it's good. And I bet a lot of people, depending on their job, obviously, but a lot of people that feel like they need to get back to work emails in the evening, I bet if they spoke to their colleagues or their boss or different people who they needed to say, just so you know, I'm not contactable in the evening, it wouldn't necessarily be as big a deal as people think it would be.
Absolutely. And also, if it is a requirement to check work email, let's say in the evening for a profession, I would be transparent and upfront with your employer and say what time you're checking your email. That way, let's say your workday is done at 5:30 or 6, you're done with work and you know you're not going to check email until 9:30 p.m. And you have that peace of mind that your employer knows you're not checking email until 9:30 p.m., so for the next 3.5 hours, you can do what you please. Then at 9:30, you check your email. But if there are emails that come in after 9:30, it's going to have to wait until the next day. Adding that predictability, I think, is so critical, even for people where it is a requirement for them to at least check in once in the evening.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Well, if people want to get a copy of Unplug, How to Break Up with Your Phone and Reclaim Your Life, it's available now on our website, tre.radio, and it's by Richard Simon, who we've been chatting to. Richard, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.